The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features ensure that you can take on any adventure. What kind of features? Well, how about the available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud? Or the standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together? How about available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone? We're always trying to think about those great spring and summer getaways, but with a car like the Hyundai Santa Fe, anywhere can be your next adventure. To learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe, go to HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Tom Fornelli, that's Bud Elliott, that's Danny Cannell. I'm Chip Patterson, coming to you live at youtube.com/cover3 and everywhere you get your podcasts on demand. Thanks for hanging out. Smash that subscribe, smash that like, and come and join us in the chat, aka the Cover 3 tailgate. Got a couple things we're going to do here on a Wednesday where we're going to go and pull back some Lindsey Buckinghams out there, mailbag questions we haven't gotten a chance to get to, but ones that we feel like it's appropriate to fold into today's show, including the outlook for the Michigan Wolverines in 2024. When we've done our way too early top 10s, we're all including Michigan. We all seem to have a high floor proposition, but what about the ceiling? You know, a lot of that's going to come down to quarterback. What do we expect is going to happen there? And so much more, but we begin with a little bit of insight offered from the greatest of all time. Nick Saban was on Capitol Hill. He was meeting with some key senators, speaking in a roundtable about name, image, and likeness. This panel is, you know, kind of an opportunity for a little bit more, you know, showy things. Some senators like to make statements, but it was interesting to hear Saban be able to offer his expertise now out of the game, some of it including. He was suggesting that they find a way for revenue sharing without employment. He was, you know, very much, you know, not really speaking in favor of NIL. And we, from the Chris Lowe story, had some of Saban's comments already about at the end of the season, you know, the players wanting to ask for NIL. Danny, it's an interesting position Nick Saban has decided to take on here in his early retirement weeks. What'd you make of some of Saban's comments, and what do you think this does to the conversation moving forward?
I wasn't in the least bit surprised that this has been his stance. I mean, I don't think this has been a secret that he hasn't been happy with it. I thought he was getting dragged a little bit unfairly. You know, I noticed Scott Van Pelt last night on the One Big Thing kind of stood up for him and said, "Hey, look, like he's somebody who coached for 50 years, and I get he's made a lot of money." But and it's easy to like poke fun at him and point out all the money and the disparity with the players. But I do think he truly is worried about the state of football. I do. I think, and if you talk to any coach out there, and a lot of them can't say it because they're worried to get used against them in recruiting, I think a lot of coaches feel this way beneath the surface. That, you know, they just, and it's funny because they're all saying the same thing. Yes, the players should be compensated somehow. Yes, they should have NIL. But they still want control over those players. They still want to be able to control when they can go, where they can go. And it's that dynamic that they're really struggling with, and that no one has a solution to how can we do this, especially without being employees. Like that, the way you position that was exactly the question I asked to Ross Dellinger. I talked to him this morning. I'm like, how is that going to work? And no one has a great answer for it. So like I left with more questions. I left, especially when hearing Ted Cruz, who it was only 60-40, go down to 50-50 that they would somehow be able to step in with any sort of resolution. So this is a mess that isn't going to get resolved anytime soon. But I was not surprised at all from Nick Saban taking the stance that he did.
You used the word control. There is a real concern around coaches that they don't have as much control as they used to have. And that's because, again, we say on the show all the time, if you want control like an employee, you need to make them employees. The Supreme Court said this business model is flatly illegal. Don't come back to us with the same thing, which guess what? The House case is probably on the way if they don't settle that thing. So I'm a little surprised that Saban wasn't more progressive here. I'm a little disappointed in Nick Saban, to be honest. You know, he's making more than $1 million per game, right? He just retired to his $20 million beach house in addition to his lake house and all his Mercedes dealerships. He's like, that's not really the guy that to me should be speaking on like, oh, players are getting some money now. Like, that's a little bit hypocritical when you've made so much money off of fixed labor cost. And now instead of having to respond with an in-kind scholarship, you have to give some slightly fair approximation of what these guys are worth, because the players are worth more than the coaches. It's going to take us a good amount of time, you know, to get there. But I thought Saban would really be a good voice for the sport when he retired and really cared about the sport more than this. And I think somebody who really cares about the sport more than this would push for a little bit more aggressive model. Like, if you care about saving the sport for the long term, you're not – he's just digging his heels in. Like, nobody thinks this revenue share, non-employee status thing is going to work in any way. It was just like him up there bitching like an old retired coach. And I was like, man, this is kind of lame, dude. Like, I thought you were going to be more – like, better for the sport than this and be a true voice for the sport when you retired. So I was disappointed.
I didn't get that vibe at all. I mean, I don't think it's hypocritical to make money and then argue that the players should be making more money. I think that's
his comments about how they said, like, he's like, the players only care about money now.
Yeah, I think they do.
That might be true. Like, if
right, so it's okay for Saban to only care about money. Like, he wasn't going to leave the Dolphins until Alabama backed up the Brinks truck.
Nick Saban's never said it wasn't okay that the players only care about money. He just said that it wasn't what he was interested in doing anymore because the players only care about money. That's two completely different things.
Yeah, I don't think Nick Saban should be disqualified because of his career earnings or real estate.
Yeah.
I think his perspective is looking out for not just the top teams that are trying to, you know, recruit all the same. I think Nick Saban, coming from Kent State, I think like Nick Saban, who like came up through coaching, probably wants to include as much of college football's past into the future as possible. And he's offering as progressive compensation as he can, but also not offering any real solutions.
I would push back on that. If you're saying he's going to be offering the most progressive thing you possibly can do to save the sport,
I didn't say most progressive. I just said his view of what he thinks, you know, like the status.
I thought you just said as most progressive as he possibly can. I apologize.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. I just think that he was sharing his thoughts about what he experienced. And I feel like as somebody who was in it for 50 years, he's got a pretty good idea of how things have changed over that time. And I mean, I don't think that his plan works either. I think that if you want to have revenue sharing, then you might as well just make them employees, because that's how it works with professional sports already. They have revenue sharing and they pay the players and they are employees. And if they are employees and they are under contract, then you will have some sense of control over them and what they do. Maybe you can't have them, you know, tell them you can't go out to the bars tonight, boys, but you can still have some control over them in that you kind of have to fulfill these duties if you want to continue to be employed here. But I don't know, man. I don't think it's fair to expect Nick Saban to be the guy to save college football. Like, none of us have an answer for how this is going to work. We know what the problems are, but I don't think anybody has a definitive solution to fix it. I think kind of discussing it and doing this kind of stuff, whether it should be done in Congress or not, totally different story. But I just think having these discussions is what leads to an eventual solution, or solution is too strong a word, what leads to an eventual compromise and a structure that works for a little bit until it no longer works and we have to come up with a new structure.
Okay, so
America.
I'm disappointed that he offered something that clearly won't work. Okay, like I thought that he cared enough about the sport and thought deeply enough about this that, you know, maybe talk to some smart people, like what could actually work for the long term? What gets us on the right track to working? You know, maybe we have a level that is more employee status, which I think a lot of schools would probably like some sort of bifurcation here, right? Okay, like maybe we get with the upcoming election, maybe some of this NLRB stuff actually is invalidated, which certainly if the election goes a certain way, it definitely could be. And then you have maybe a bit of a breaking off. You have more of a revenue sharing level and then a non-revenue sharing level. There are things you could propose that could theoretically work. What Saban proposed won't work. Like this just clearly won't. It's not a viable option. So from that standpoint, I was disappointed in him.
Well, what did he propose? I thought he was just complaining and laying out the issues. Did he have a solution? Well,
he did a couple things. He was complaining that players only care about the money now, right? Which from my standpoint, that was kind of hypocritical. And it's like, Nick, like you left Kent State for a reason. You left Michigan State for a reason, right? You left the Dolphins for a reason. You didn't take the Texas job because Bama backed up the truck, you know, bought out the mortgage, all that kind of stuff for a reason. Now, he also proposed that they revenue share some amount, keep the control, but make them not employees, which again, the control plus the employees thing is just not going to work. Like they, you know, you lose 9-0. It's kind of just.
So
yeah, but I don't think Nick Saban has a firm grasp on the law. You know what I mean? Yeah, he's not a lawyer.
Right. But I'm saying like he's such a good spokesperson. I feel like they missed this opportunity, man. Like you could get some smart people with Nick Saban, have him be the voice of something that could actually work. And this won't.
But that's the thing. Who are the people that are he's being the voice for? Like it, so he's just like a PR person for a consulting company. I mean, he's just sharing his opinions in front of Congress. That's why he was asked to be there.
Well, I mean, sure, he has been.
Who's he the PR person for now?
Nobody.
So, but he's been
coaches, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. Current coaches and current athletic directors. I mean, he's been proposed as the perfect, you know, potential college football commissioner. NFL commissioner works on behalf of the owners. They don't work on behalf of the players. Mm-hmm. So like that is the side that he is approaching it from. On the winning thing, or on the players only worried about money, I'll push back, bud, because you can't win a national championship at Kent State. You can't win a national championship at Michigan State. I mean, maybe you could do that. You know, so he ultimately got to where he could win national championships, right? And I think that's the struggle for him is that players now don't care about championships. They care about getting paid. And I think that's a really tough spot for him to be on because it's always been that was a big sell. And yes, I know there's been money handed to them and that's been a part of the equation, but that has overtaken the conversation where it is all about. And he said 78% of the players just want to know, am I getting playing time? Am I getting paid? And I think that's a real struggle. And I would say that maybe that doesn't even come from the system. It comes from youth. Like it comes from parents. I think it's a much bigger problem than, oh, the players are getting NIL money. Then all of a sudden this has happened. You see this creep in at youth sports with the transferring and getting to the better schools and are in high school, you know, where can I win? Where can I increase my best chance to get paid at the next level? And a lot of times that messaging comes from the parents. So I don't know if that's like, that's where I would disagree with Saban that, I see where it's been a problem for you. It's been a problem for a lot of people at a lot of different places. And it's the first time he's really had to deal with it.
By the way,
I mean, I'm sure he's pissed that he miscalculated, you know, I mean, like it's pretty well known, like Bama's collective was not as good as some other collectives out there. And I think that he thought that the discount that players would take to play for him would continue forever, or the NIL discount. I'm not saying Bama had a discount in other areas of recruiting, certainly.
And no.
Did provide some value with NFL development, but like he was so damn good under the old system, he failed. Like he finally found a college rule change that he failed to adapt to. I think, you know, he's pissed about it.
Well, the place that I have a problem with him, because I like of all the stuff, I feel like I'm defending Saban. The place that I found that feels hypocritical is when all of a sudden now he's the voice for parity. Like that to me is hypocritical when he's like, hey, yes. I'll make sure everybody's on a level playing field when you've had this advantage for 17 years creating this monster behemoth program because you had an advantage the whole time. And now all of a sudden you want to spread it out. That to me is the part that's hypocritical.
But is that hypocrisy or is that looking into the future and seeing how things are changing? Like, I think he's right. I think that if things continue the way they are and there's really no kind of it's just unchecked, whatever the hell you want to call it, that we're dealing with, 10 to 15 years from now, fans are going to start looking at this product and asking, why the hell should I care? There's only like 10 teams that really matter.
Okay, I'd push back on that huge. Like, how many different programs seriously compete for the biggest prize now? Like, I think NIL has created a lot more parity because Bama and Georgia can't hoard every single, you know, potential future superstar on their roster for the long term. They lose some. Like, Auburn misses in recruiting. They go and they go buy that kid back from Georgia, or, you know, recruit that kid back from Georgia off their roster, right? Like, Bama can't hold all the five stars on their roster anymore. Like, we talked about Ole Miss winning the SEC. Ole Miss has not won the SEC in the color television era, right? I think it's creating more parity across.
Totally. There used to be 130 schools that people cared about. The way this sport is going, everything is being driven towards two conferences.
Yeah,
like, the conferences no longer exist. It's two leagues now.
In what way does the Super League make you not care about the MAC? Like, if you like the MAC school, your school never competed for a national title, college football playoff, anything like that. Like, you like that school because you like watching your guys compete against your other local rivals. In what way does that change?
The MAC doesn't change, but they're going after casual viewers. The MAC has never been for casual viewers. They are gearing the sport towards casual viewers. The people we know who, when we see them and when we go out, you know, fans, your family, friends, you go to like your, you know, a family, whatever gathering, and everybody asks you 1,000 questions about, well, who's good this year? Who's going to win this? Who's going to win that? The people who do not pay attention until the very end. That's who everything is being geared towards. Where if you are a diehard, and you are a diehard of a team that isn't one of those Big Ten or SEC schools, or even if you are and you're like the bottom tier of it, at some point, I mean, you've seen it with professional sports. Like, everybody outside the NFL, the more they expand the playoff and the more focus they put onto playoff and postseason in every single sport, regular season interest wanes, overall fan interest wanes. And I think that with this current format, the way things are going, until they get whatever employees, revenue sharing, however you want to do it, if you keep going this direction, and I don't think they will, I do think 10 to 15 years from now, a large portion of fans will start checking out. You're already seeing it. I hear it from people all the time. A lot of people aren't watching as close as they used to. They're not paying as close of attention. They don't like the current landscape of the sport.
Why are ratings up then over the last couple of years and everything?
Casuals.
Back-to-back years.
Yeah, I thought the interesting thing from Dennis's article on the attendance, this is where I think it hurts the group of five. All the power fours were up. Even the Pac-12 was up. The only group of five that was up was the Sun Belt. Every other group of five conference was down in attendance after we're seeing this bump. That's where I do feel like they're maybe disinterested and the system is screwing me over. Like, we don't have a chance. But I would say, when did you ever have a chance? Like, when were you ever going to really compete for a championship in the history of college football, of 130 teams? And when we talk about it all the time, well, there's really only 15 programs a year, but like in a span of a cycle of 10, 15 years, it's really 25. So like, what's the difference? I think it brings in though. So at least like the MAC, if you win if you're a, Western Michigan with PJ Fleck, you might be like, hey, we can make the playoffs this year. So wouldn't that help like the expansion? Wouldn't that help the group of five?
For a little bit, yeah.
Earlier,
I said 10 to 15 years down the road. I'm not talking about right now.
Oh man, hey, listen,
I think the one thing that does hurt the group of five, because I don't want to be blind to this, is the portal.
Right? Oh, kills them.
Yes,
because NIL players getting paid, I really don't think that hurts the sport at all. And there's no data that says that people actually stop watching because of that. I do think that eventually we will find data that all of the player movement, because they're not willing to recognize them as employees and put them on contracts that prevent the movement, creates a sort of a dynamic where you're not able to have as much attachment to your school's star. So their refusal to make these guys employees, right, and put them on contracts where they can't just move around all the time, that's actually hurting the sport quite a bit, which is their own doing. Like, they're dragging their feet on this, and they're allowing for the unlimited transfer portal.
for sure. Because like you think about it, and it sounds hokey. Like if you're somebody who became a college sports fan while you were in school, like you obviously have that connection because, you know, you were, and they were, you know, supposedly they were your classmates at the time, but we even kind of lose that because now everybody's taking online courses. So you never see any of these players around campus. They're always in the facility or taking their courses. But like there's that connection that you develop with a kid when they come to your team and you see them as a freshman and you see them kind of quote unquote grow up as players, as people, then they move on and you keep that connection. That's gone now, unless, you know, even at the top, because if you're Ohio State or Alabama or Georgia, well, not so much Georgia, but a lot of the top programs, you're bringing in new guys every single year, even no matter how good you already are. So it's like there really isn't that kind of connection that fans start to get with the players. And I think that is something that maybe doesn't seem like a big deal on the surface, but that, yeah, along with my 10 to 15 years thing that like Saban was saying, that's one of those little fraying threads that I think is causing people to separate themselves emotionally from the game.
I think that's killed college basketball, which started with the one and done when you couldn't get used to your players. Then it carried over into the transfer portal era. And I think it's one of the big reasons why women's basketball has been so huge. You've got stars that are there for 3 or 4 years. They're even staying for 5 years because they're going to make more money off NIL. So that's been the great, you know, a great solution. But I also think that's one of the reasons you have recognizable stars in Paige Beckers, Caitlin Clark, Cameron Brink, the girl at Stanford, and Angel Reese. Like you've got a slew of stars who have been there multiple years. And so we start to recognize those players in those same uniforms. Not to say they can't move too, because Haley Van Lith moved to LSU, but like, there have been more stars that have stayed at one place. And I do think that tugs on what has made college football special over the years is getting to know your players, seeing them stay and being able to root for them and cheering. Cause I do think that turns a lot of fans off. Like I'm sure Ole Miss fans are like, wait a second, Quinshon Judkins, like he was our guy. Like we've been watching him for 2 years and he just bounced, like, and they're still going to be good. But imagine if they weren't going to be good this year, then they'd really be upset. You know, then you're really on the out.
Bud mentioned the house case on our YouTube channel right now. If you've not gone to check it out, I promise these aren't plants, just a promo, but you know, we've got the Cover 3 tailgate. Hey, Bud, thanks for the breakdown of the house case. I'm looking forward to future breakdowns on other legal cases. We got you covered. That's why it's called Billable Hours. Dre in the tailgate this morning, he jumped in at 9:46 a.m. before we got started, said that breakdown was fire emoji. I've seen multiple Twitter accounts who are very interested in college football and the future of college sports. They've all been pointing to it like, hey, this is what you need to pay attention to. Bud did a good job of identifying. There's not a good explainer of what exactly it is and what it's going to mean moving forward. So again, go and check it out on our Cover 3 YouTube channel where we've got that nice little breakdown. Kendall also said, killed it. So we appreciate your hard work of putting that together. We had a lot of good work on the editing side. Mikey, Greg, whole team really came through with that. So like the way it turned out. And if you want a good explainer of that case, which is driving the employment conversation in college sports, one of the reasons why they called Nick Saban up to Capitol Hill, then be sure to go and check that out.
Quick question. Why did they do the round table, which meant nothing as opposed to talking to the House, which would have had a lot more at stake?
I would assume that's a deal. If I was Nick Saban's attorney or right. Nick Saban,
right.
I would agree to the lowest stakes, right. Most informal.
Right. Like, no cross-examination. Yeah, he'll have to push back. No, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I do not want to be perjured for anything right. That is going on in terms right. Of this conversation.
So how much were your guys getting 10 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Great point.
Not all those Dodge Chargers.
Yeah. I think that he was trying to avoid the oath and anything that could be held against him. And Nick, that's why you're the greatest, you know, smart man. Let's make this as informal as possible. But yeah, still his comments, yes, lead to a little bit of discussion, but also sort of lead to this bigger discussion. We appreciate everybody for rocking with us. It's a little bit wonky, but I truly believe that between our passion for college football, Bud's legal expertise, our experience covering this sport, Danny's experience being in the sport, I do think we've got a unique set of perspectives trying to navigate what is a murky and uncertain future for this sport we love so much.
I apologize about the length of the video. YouTube indexes at 8 minutes. So I got done with that thing about 6 minutes and 30 seconds. And I was like, I need to kind of just, you know,
don't
Don't give away the secrets.
If you watch 6 minutes, 30 seconds of that, I'm pretty happy. Okay.
But, so. But just talking like, so when it comes to the employment,
yeah,
is going to listen to the pod on 1.5. Just play it back on 0.5.
Yeah, there you go. All right, coming up on the other side, a Michigan great who was a part of Jim Harbaugh's staff is not going to be around. Is that a big deal or no big deal? And so that we can get some actual football talk going, what's going to happen at quarterback for Michigan in 2024? All that and more next.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We here at the Cover 3 Podcast are so excited to welcome a new podcast to the CBS Sports family. It's that month. We know you're craving hoops, but maybe not just on the college level. Beyond the Arc is a brand new show featuring daily NBA conversations with hosts John Gonzalez, Bill Ryder, and Ashley Nicole Moss, as well as regular appearances from NBA champion Avery Johnson. Download and follow Beyond the Arc wherever you find this podcast. Back here on the Cover 3 Podcast, the Michigan spring practice will get going here in about 5 days. March 18th is when they'll get rocking and rolling. And now we are finally starting to finalize the coaching staff for Sherrone Moore in his first year as the permanent head coach. Tom, Mike Hart, running backs coach, it's not going to be a part of the staff for the Wolverines. Big deal, no deal, medium deal. What's the thought here?
Medium deal.
Okay.
I think that, I mean, Mike Hart, obviously a former Wolverine, been on that staff for a while, was a good running backs coach for him, was a good recruiter for them. Losing him is not, you know, going to make you happy, but Mike Hart, I don't think he's irreplaceable either. Like, I think you could find another running backs coach who maybe doesn't have the same emotional connection to the program. You'd still be okay. So I think it's a medium deal. I don't know if it's going to really shake anything up too much.
Same.
I think they would rather have kept him if he was cool in the role that he had.
That was something I didn't want to speak out of turn here, but wasn't there some Mike Hart wants more for Mike Hart amidst all this turnover?
And wasn't that there Mike Hart wants to be the next coach?
That is, yeah, that is right. My understanding. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And so when Sherrone Moore is named the next head coach, now we've created some friction. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you're still going to be the running backs coach and there's no kind of promotion in it.
I mean, and he's been a guy that's been mentioned before this season as potentially the next coach. He played there. I'm sure there's some egos involved here. I think this is kind of normal. I don't look at it as some red flag. I think it's just normal that you would see somebody be like, wait a second. I thought I was going to be the guy and I'm not getting any bump. Like, I don't think it's I don't think it's that big of a deal.
What about his recruiting, bud? I mean, do you look at him as one of the on Sherrone Moore's staff as it stands right now? Does the recruiting apparatus take a big hit with the loss of Hart, or has Moore in his time since joining that staff been able to have enough wins and drive enough recruiting success himself that you're not going to think that Moore was going to be leaning on Hart in such a way that that's going to take a step back?
Chip, I think it's more the latter. Like, I don't really think that they were depending on Mike Hart to carry this staff's recruiting. I actually think there is some chance that Michigan's recruiting improves under Sherrone Moore, just because I don't think Sherrone Moore is going to be rumored to be taking an NFL job every offseason, like after signing. I do think that that sort of impacted Michigan a little bit in recruiting. I don't think it was an enormous deal. It wasn't a deal breaker for most kids, but you can't tell me on the margins that the question of like, hey, this head coach tries to leave for the NFL every single offseason, very clearly, didn't have some impact on the elite players who have a lot of options. So, I don't think the Mike Hart thing is going to hurt their recruiting too much.
Do y'all know who the reports are indicating is being targeted for Michigan staff?
It's a school in the Midwest, so I got to assume Tony Alford's name has popped up.
You got it.
Yeah. Notre Dame, Michigan, Ohio State. It's just, you know, there's like that whole triangle.
Yeah, they're just all jumping around. Because Tony Alford's on the staff right now at Ohio State, correct? Yeah. That'd be something. That would be something. Sherrone Moore going to get Tony Alford from Ohio State. Again, those are just reports literally this morning. We'll see if there's any movement on that here in the next 24 hours or so before we're back with you on Thursday. And on Thursdays, we like to dive into the big old bag of mail. We don't always have time for all of the excellent questions that get in there, but that doesn't mean that we forget them. So when it is appropriate, like when we're talking about Michigan football, I'd like to throw them in. So this question comes from Seth. Best college football pod out there. Been listening since the 24/7 days. I am a huge Michigan fan, and I am on cloud nine right now. However, looking ahead to 2024, I see 3 to 4 losses easy. What is going to happen at quarterback? We have Alex Orji, Jaden Denegal, Jaden Davis. He did not include Jack Tuttle. He said, I guess he didn't know about the 7th year of eligibility that was going to be granted to Jack Tuttle. He said, I'm worried about the offense. Thoughts? So Mikey has put together a nice little breakdown for us that we can look at. So yes, Jack Tuttle, year 7. He was in the same recruiting class as Trevor Lawrence and Michael Penix, and here he is battling for the starting quarterback job in the 2024 season. He, of course, came from Indiana. Alex Orji, we got to see him a good bit last season, a little bit more of a, you know, specialized package that they had for him in the ground game. He will have an opportunity to show that he is more than just a Wildcat quarterback. Jaden Denegal, no real significant body of work there. You see just 5 pass attempts in the whole season. And then the true freshman, Jaden Davis. He arrives a blue chip player coming out of high school who will, you know, represent what could be a high future for them. Whether they need him in 2024, that's yet to be seen, especially with some other experience there. But I'll throw it to you first here, especially with your knowledge of Davis and some of the prospects behind these guys. How do you think it's going to end up playing out for Michigan's offense?
Yeah, so I kind of am curious, like, what are Michigan's goals for this season, right? Do they feel like they have a team that can compete for the national title, or just a team that can compete to win the Big Ten, or maybe like, hey, like internally, we feel like making the playoff would be a good goal. My guess is probably somewhere in the middle. Like, they definitely probably still feel like they can win the Big Ten with this team, but you need to kind of craft your offense with 2 goals. One, long-term, what does Sherrone Moore want to run independent of Harbaugh? Now, I think they were running a lot of Sherrone stuff, but there's certainly a hell of a lot of Harbaugh influence in what they ran. Number two, as a first-time head coach, it is pretty important that you get off on the right foot and you play to your strengths. The strengths of this team will be this defense, because this defense is going to be absolutely nasty again. You still have Kenneth Grant. You still have Mason Grant. Josiah Stewart came back. You got Jayshon coming over from Maryland at linebacker. A lot of your secondary is back. I mean, Rod Moore's back. Will Johnson's back. So the point, who's not back is Ladarius Henderson, Trevor Keegan, Drake Nugent, Zach Zinter, and Carson Barnhart. That's like your whole offensive line. my guess here is they're going to need more help in the run game than they had. And thus, I think doing like adding a plus one runner at quarterback makes a lot of sense because they also lost a decent bit of their playmakers at receiver who looked pretty damn good at the combine, by the way. So we may be underrating the quality of the losses that they had there at the receiver position. So I would think, I would guess that it's going to be Orji or maybe Denegal. Their OC said that Denegal was the most improved player on offense last year. I got that from the Brandon Marcello piece that he put out on the big burning questions for the Big Ten this spring. But, man, they put Orji in games and trusted him to run around. He only attempted one pass, I believe. So how sort of grounded pound will this Michigan offense look? I think potentially like very grounded pound with a lot of QB run game is what I'm anticipating. Like them in South Carolina feel very similar to me in how I think approach-wise they could look this year with some of the QB run game stuff. If Jaden Davis is able to make a jump and take over that offense, that would be very surprising to me as a true freshman with all of the new pieces there as well. But like I think Michigan, man, if you just have some kind of like really good run game with the QB and you play defense like that, they could win 10 games. So that's kind of what I think they'll probably do.
Going back to Jack Tuttle, Chip, you mentioned that he was in the same recruiting class as like Trevor Lawrence and Michael Penix. We didn't talk about it on Monday, but I found this hilarious. You know, Drew Pine has transferred to Missouri. He left Notre Dame and went to Arizona State. Now he's at Missouri. And I was shocked to find out that Drew Pine still has 3 years of eligibility left because Drew Pine is 7 months younger than Michael Penix, and he could still play another three seasons. As for Michigan, I think that there are three options to be starting next year. I think it's Alex Orji, Jaden Denegal, or an unnamed transfer that hasn't shown up on campus yet and might come in and the portal after the spring, depending on what Bud was touching on, what Michigan's ultimate goal is in 2024. If they want to make a run at a national title again and defend it, I don't think they have the QB on their roster to do that right now. But I do think when you look at this offense, like Jim Harbaugh was there. We know how Jim Harbaugh is. Sherrone Moore is the offensive coordinator. Sherrone Moore is an offensive line coach. When you watch Michigan's offense last year, the run game was far more complicated than the passing game. Like they did more as far as formations and shifts when they were running the ball than when they were passing. Like you might get a guy go in motion on a pass. You might not, probably not. But in the run game, oh my God, everybody's shifting all around. They're changing around. They're getting guys, yeah, whatever. So I think you're probably going to see more of that because I think Sherrone Moore just really likes running the ball. I think there's a reason Jim Harbaugh promoted him to be offensive coordinator, and there is the question marks of the offensive line. So I do think there's a chance Alex Orji is the starter because of what he brings. But I don't know if he threw a pass last year, and that's one of the things because you know that they trust him because they used him in the biggest games. They brought him in against Ohio State. They brought him in against Alabama. They brought him in against Washington. He didn't throw a pass in any of those games. So it's like they clearly like him, but what is he as a passer? Because if he's in there and he can't throw, then your offense becomes a lot easier to defend if the defense doesn't give a damn about you possibly throwing the ball. As for Jaden Denegal, you touched on it, Bud. Kurt Campbell talked about how improved he was. He's huge. He's like 6'5".
Yeah.
He's a big boy, but he's not exactly the most mobile guy, but they do say he's very accurate. So you could see him, and if they want to just go kind of pro-stylish, we're going to be leaning on the run, but we're still going to want to throw the ball. Denegal might be the better option, whereas we're not going to use him in the run game. But we do think, you know, if we go with the J.J. McCarthy plan of third and J.J. bail us out after we get 3 yards on the first two plays, Denegal might be the better option for him. So that's the other one. But Jaden Davis, I think, is the QB of the future. I do not think it would be fair to Jaden Davis to have a true freshman come in and have him starting for the defending national champions. I think that would just be a bad spot. So I think it's Denegal or Orji, but I don't think we should rule out the possibility of a transfer this spring.
I don't think you're going to ask him to do too much, no matter who it is. I mean, they didn't ask J.J. McCarthy to do a whole lot. I'm saying like attempts-wise, volume. You know, it's going to be between 18 and 25 attempts mostly. And then every once in a while, maybe if there's an opportunity to air it out, you might go 30. The thing I'm kind of more interested in on the defense, because I think they're going to run the ball. I think they're going to be exactly who they were on the offensive side of the ball. It's going to be a different quarterback and there'll be some growing pains, but like, it's not a quarterback dependent system. And Donovan Edwards is going to get a lot of work, But with Martindale coming in as the defensive coordinator, more blitzing, more man coverage, you know, that opens up your vulnerability when they play USC, when they play Texas. You know, if you don't get home or if you aren't running stride for stride and you don't cover, that's a lot of yards after the catch. That's a lot of big plays. So are they forced to become something they haven't had to be, playing from behind? You know, all of a sudden you look up, you're 10 points down because you gave up a couple big plays. Like, that to me is the more interesting dynamic that could find Michigan a little bit more vulnerable than this past season. Because they're playing, you know, we've joked about it before about the Big Ten defenses. How will they do against these new? Well, they're not only getting USC from out of the conference, they're getting the Texas, who's got so many fireworks. So I'm really curious to see how Michigan's defense stacks up where it's been dominant the last couple of years.
I don't know if they can be as effective in the run game with all the turnover on the offensive line. I mean, there's some program development there you got to trust, right?
Well, that's what I'm kind of going with. Yeah, so like, trust what they've done. Well,
I would counter that by saying they dealt with a lot of injuries on the offensive line last year, and they were still able to run the ball down Alabama and Washington's playoff games. So, I mean, again,
it's a mindset.
You look at their run game and how they do things and just the variety of ways that it's like their zone sometimes, their man, there's inside, there's out. They look like the San Francisco 49ers in the run game. In the pass game, they look like 1995 Michigan. But in the run game, they look like, you know, an NFL offense. It's incredible what they do.
I agree with the idea like that they do a lot, but there's also another name I forgot to read off, Trente Jones. Is also gone. So, I mean, you're talking like your top six offensive linemen, or maybe top seven, are gone from that team. Like, they had, I remember going back to the summer school series with Sam Webb, and he was saying, like, they basically have seven guys who they feel like can play. And I do think that they have a lot of nice young talent on the roster, but that will matter to me. Also, it's going to matter. Like, I think Roman Wilson was a pretty decent college player, right? Mm-hmm. Cornelius was pretty good as well. And, like, if you guys think J.J. McCarthy is worthy of a first-round pick, we have to sort of count for that in the model. Like, if you lose a first-round pick at quarterback and you lose two receivers, is Wilson going to get drafted? I assume so.
Yes. Right?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, two NFL picks at receiver, top six or seven offensive linemen, and a first-round quarterback, that's why I think you need to go with a QB whose legs are really, really a factor, because it kind of gives you that plus one in the run game that – is that going to work against like Ohio State or Texas? Maybe not. But I do think that going with heavy QB run game with a guy as athletic as Orji is, if you can get him to make some kind of leap as a passer, ensures like a nice floor for you. Like, you're not going to go 6-6 doing that. You're not going to go 7-5 doing that. Not with that defense.
What's Michigan's non-con again? I know you said they've got Texas? But who else are they? All right, I was going to say, Texas, so they can't. They can't do the Jim Harbaugh plan where they go with both Orji and Denegal in the non-con because you've got too big of a game. So I was going to say, if they had a non-con this year, I wouldn't be surprised if that was the path they took. Like, both guys would play in the non-con and we just figure it out from there.
I think you'll see no matter what, I think against Texas, you might see multiple quarterbacks. I just don't know if they're going to know. And they haven't been afraid to play two before. And if they're both kind of running, you kind of play them both and see who kind of emerges.
did y'all make anything out of the Trev Alberts news, by the way? I did. That happened right before we got going.
What is it?
He's going to be the Texas A&M athletic director.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. So Ross Bjork leaves Texas A&M to go be the new athletic director at Ohio State. Texas A&M athletic director opening apparently being filled by Trev Alberts, the former Nebraska.
Wow.
Great. Who was the Nebraska athletic director and Nebraska through and through. This was actually it from the tailgate. Kyle says a lot of discussion on the show about how Elko is doing a good thing for A&M by hiring good ball coaches, not just collecting big names. Is Trev Alberts a good hire for Texas A&M or just a big name?
First of all, shout out to Ryan for saying he can't believe Chip closed the AD carousel. I would say when it comes to athletic directors, I am not going to sit here and pretend I know what a good athletic director hire is. I have no idea.
Same.
But it is surprising to me that Alberts is leaving Nebraska for A&M because, like you said, Chip, he's a Nebraska legend. He's been there only a couple of years and he's beloved there. So if he's leaving for A&M, I feel like he's either they've thrown a giant bag at him, and because I can't figure out another reason why he would go. So will it work? I have no idea, but you're going to a place that clearly has the revenue source to do what you want to do. It's just, can you corral everybody? I don't know. Like if I talked about this in Slack this morning with our fellow college football compatriots, but if Trev Alberts goes to A&M and fails, like a lot of things that happen at A&M, I wouldn't put it on Alberts as much as I would put it on Texas A&M.
Did the question say that Ross Bjork was a great AD?
No.
Because, I mean, that's the thing.
Kyle didn't
he did hire Jimbo.
Right.
He's made some mistakes, which was kind of wild that you can fail forward in that industry based on perception.
He did not hire Jimbo. He
gave him the fully guaranteed deal. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Woodward. Yeah. Scott Woodward hired him the first time. Right. This is what stands out to me. Trev Alberts was the one who dropped the comment last summer along the lines of like, listen, you guys get ready because the next wave of conference realignment is going to be the big one. And the way that he was talking about it was kind of like the way down the line when the Big Ten's up again and everybody else is up again. And, you know, that was almost the threat to the little schools that are just like, just getting these big old Big Ten SEC paychecks, but not contributing anything to the bottom line. Like that was my spidey sense going off by saying, okay, so Trev Alberts is very much in the mindset that the Super League breakaway will not be clean in terms of all SEC and Big Ten schools all getting to go together because you're in the SEC and the Big Ten on 2024. So then when that same person moves to Texas A&M, I'm like, yo, is Nebraska going to get left out of the Super League? Is he jumping? But that is me connecting way too many dots along the lines. But just I appreciated his honesty in stirring up some paranoia with that comment last summer. That's the only thing that stands out to me on my Alberts card.
Okay, so did Alberts hire Scott Frost?
No, he fired him.
He fired him.
Okay, right.
Did we ever find out how the NCAA found out about the practices with an analyst and the COVID restriction time either? I don't know if we ever found that out, did we?
Oh, did we get a Jeremy Pruitt situation? Call coming from inside the house?
I don't know. I just don't know if I remember how they found out.
I will say we spend a lot of time talking about who ADs hire. We don't spend nearly as much time discussing who they do and don't fire. He did fire Scott Frost. Nebraska football seems to be going in the right direction. He didn't fire Fred Hoiberg, and now Nebraska basketball is going to the NCAA tournament. So it's not just about who you hire, it's who you keep.
Look, it's a restart the clock move for Alberts, probably a raise. A&M, because it has never had success really at anything as far as like the major men's sports, is a low pressure job with a huge check. Like, you get to play with like unlimited money. There are no real expectations that you're like expected to meet. I mean, there are some obviously that come with the money, but it's not like Kalen DeBoer taking over for Nick Saban where it's like, hey man, national titles are easy here. This is what we expect. It's a better job than Nebraska, I think. Nebraska, to me, is a worse job post-conference expansion than Texas A&M is post-conference expansion. So I think it's a win for Trev.
Interesting.
I mean, when we did our top 10 list, Texas A&M was right in the mix. I don't think they made it, but no one mentioned Nebraska.
That's a good point.
Are they good in baseball, too, I believe?
Yeah.
Fairly good in baseball?
Nebraska or A&M?
A&M.
No, A&M.
I assume all SEC schools are good at baseball blindly,
just like the ACC.
About it a lot. Yeah.
Works out more often than not. All right, coming up on the other side, of all of the coaches who will take the sideline in 2024, how many will still be at the same school in 5 years? We're going to do 5 minutes on all 134 coaches. No, I'm just kidding. We'll get into that and more next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Back here on the Cover 3 podcast. This question coming from about a month ago. I liked it a lot, but let's make sure we hit it before we get out of here. Dominic says, love the show. You guys remind me of the Ninja Turtles. Chip is Leonardo. Danny brings the humor as Michelangelo. Tom mixes humor with intelligence as Raphael. And Bud is obviously the studious, serious Donatello. Have a mailbag question. Everybody wants to know how the new coaches are going to do with the next 5 years. My question is a bit different. Of the 134 coaches who are now at schools, how many will still be at the same school in 5 years? I would set the over under at 50.5 and probably take the under.
All right. I have a question for you guys. How many coaches are still around in the same job from 5 years ago?
Seven. Damn. Good.
I did some research. So I am doing the Donatello thing here today. I actually did some research on this.
From 5 years ago. So 5 years ago would be 2019 season.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 57.
Danny? I'll say 52.
I'll say 35. Closest without going over.
Everybody went over. The answer is 27.
I won.
Whoa!
Wow.
27 college football coaches are in the same job that they were 5 years ago. Here's the list. I'm going to read this fast. Dabo, Ryan Day, Kirby Smart, Troy Calhoun, PJ Fleck, James Franklin, Kyle Whittingham, Kirk Ferentz, Dave Clawson, Mike Gundy, Chris Klieman, Pat Narduzzi, Mark Stoops, Justin Wilcox, Chuck Martin, Jim McElwain, Mack Brown, Matt Campbell, Kalani Sitake, Jason Candle, Chris Creighton, Neil Brown, Jeff Munkin, Dave Doran, Mike Blumgren, Mike Loxley, and Scott Leffler.
Wow. So 27. So you're saying, let's see.
But does, I wonder though,
27 out of 131, not 134, right?
Sure. Yeah,
like, I don't think it would be much higher than that, but I do wonder if like COVID kind of impacted that number. So in the same way that like you saw with like recruiting and quarterback classes and all that kind of stuff. So I think maybe if you did it 5 years from now, it would still be low. I'm guessing it wouldn't be more than 40, but I wonder if you'd see a difference at least.
But if that was one in five, because that's essentially what we're dealing with, is just like one out of every five coaches from 2019 are still in their spot heading into 2024. It's generational, right? So we are starting to see some coaches phase out. I think you could get two out of it. I think you get 40% of coaches still being in the same job. Instead of one out of five, I bet you could get two out of five.
So there were 27. How many of those guys were in the MAC? Four? McElwain, great.
Candle, and Chuck Martin. Yeah.
So, yeah. Mac, home of instability, as always.
Do you think that We will probably see more coaches retire earlier because they are making so much more money now, right, than they used to. Like when Bowden made his first, like in 90, was it 95, Danny, that he became the first $1 million coach?
Yeah, it was definitely when I was there. I don't remember if it was, I think it was probably probably after the national championship. So, 94, 95.
So, I mean, in the 20 years since, like now we see the highest paid coach making 15, right? Like salaries have 15x'd. Now, a lot of times you did see college coaches coaching a long time because they were making so much money. And nowadays, I think it's – or because they weren't making so much money, you know, earlier in their careers. Now, if you coach for 10 years at a major school or just like get two contracts, you're like generationally wealthy. And so I don't think you're going to see quite as many guys coaching their 70s or even late 60s.
Mm. What about the schools and the itchy trigger finger that we've been talking about, where you're just like more likely to get fired before 5 years now than ever before? That I didn't do the Donatella research there, but that feels like where we're at. Certainly seeing Power Five coaches or Power Conference coaches getting fired earlier than ever before, you know, some year two, year three firings, and not just for scandal, just for performance.
I mean, do you think we see the trend continue where guys take, you know, both, I don't know if we'll ever see a Chip Kelly move again, but who knows, maybe we do, but we've also seen head coaches go take other jobs to be coordinators, as the Alabama staff, you know, suggests. You know, the group of five movement, you know, do we see that trend continue?
Where you get there and like a group of five becomes even more mercenary. I mean, I thought that with the Jerry Kill and Rich Rod, I thought we were going to see, you know, some of these coaches come back and end up taking those jobs and stay there for a long time. But even Jerry Kill just does a short stint and he's like, I'm good. I'm gonna go live in Nashville.
The brightest stars burn out quicker, Chip.
That's true. That's an interesting statistic. So what's our number moving forward?
Is there any trend? Donatello, you didn't do any research on the entire trend, did you? Like every year over year?
No, I just
Do we see more stability or less stability? I say we're still going to be movement. I'll put it the same.
Like we're still going to be operating with like tons of turnover.
A lot of turnover.
Even on that list, there were names of coaches who I think might be out of the game in 5 years. Mike Gundy,
we'll say
at any like minute, 30. Could be like, I'm going to go hunt rattlesnakes later.
I think 38 is a good number.
38 like,
kind of close to what I think close to what Tom guessed. We're definitely seeing some of the guys who were in jobs in 2019 who no longer have them were really impacted by that first early signing period cycle. It just really crushed expectations, and a lot of guys put a lot of eggs in that basket, and overwhelmingly the attrition from those without the compensatory nature of the transfer portal, which wouldn't really fully come until 2 years later to be able to make up for all the mistakes that you had in that sort of like brand new hire, early signing period window, it adverse selection city, where the guys you're actually available to get in such a short courtship period were oftentimes there for the taking for bad reasons, right? Thus, sorry, I'm just repeating myself with adverse selection. But yeah, so I think that was sort of a unique time in our sport, plus the COVID thing that went on. So I think closer to 40 is probably a smarter number. 27 feels maybe uniquely low.
There were over 30 coaching hires in this bananas coaching carousel that we covered so extensively. How many of them make it to year five at the same school?
Six.
Whoa! No.
20%.
No, I'm going to say 10.
Six.
To year five.
I'll go 8. I think it's low. These are some high-pressure jobs, too.
Chip is such an optimist. Oh, I think a whole third of them will go. You just said we had 30 coaching changes this offseason. You think 30% of them will go?
Yeah. Oh, you got it. Yeah.
This time it's going to work.
Did it work for those couples? No, but I think it might work for us. Oh, man. That Donatella, thank you for doing that research. We really appreciate it. These are awesome questions, and they come from you filling up the big old bag of mail, joining us live in the Cover 3 tailgate, and offering new conversation topics. We love it, and that's exactly going to be the focus of our show tomorrow, Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern time. So come and join us. Live mailbag questions from the Cover 3 tailgate and questions from the big old bag of mail. And you can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fernelli. You can follow him at Danny Cannell. You can follow him at BloodElliot3. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Raphael was my favorite Ninja Turtle, so thank you for that.
CBS Monday.
Federal agents.
Here's where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it all on fire.
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10/9 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.